see what happens to that caterpillar in the future. It might be one of those that stays active all winter, and we'll be talking about that when we chat with Clinton Nienhaus this morning. He's going to join us in the 8:40 hour, and we will chat with him about all sorts of things related to winter phenology. Clinton is the naturalist for the Sac Zim Bog. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
Coming up will be the Up North Report. We've got lots of news from our region, including about the Bagley Police Department and an update on northern Minnesotans that won 3 medals at the state swimming and diving meet last weekend. Stay tuned for that story, and then we'll have a little bit more from Morning Edition as well.
Support for KAXE comes from the Children's Discovery Museum in Grand Rapids, offering a hands-on learning environment for children to develop skills and grow their imagination. With a new bear cave, an Ojibwe constellation exhibit, and a kid-sized credit union to learn banking concepts. Hours and weekly programming available at cdmkids.org.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. A man is dead and a Cass County Sheriff's deputy was hospitalized after the two parties exchanged gunfire near Walker Sunday afternoon. In a news release, the Cass County Sheriff's Office says they responded around 5 p.m. to a 911 call reporting gunfire around Onigam Road and Old Agency Trail, about 4 miles northeast of Walker. While attempting to contact a man seen walking on the Onigam Road, a man fled and a foot pursuit ensued. The release says there was then a, quote, exchange of gunfire. The man was pronounced dead at the scene, and the deputy who was shot was flown to a Fargo hospital via helicopter. The investigation has been handed over to the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. The agency declined to comment amid the open investigations in the region. This is the third law enforcement shooting in the region in the last 4 months. Last week, a Clearwater County deputy shot and killed a man in Bagley. A Walker police officer shot a knife-wielding man at a Dollar General in August. The deputies involved have been placed on critical incident leave. One of the companies involved with bringing a proposed data center to Hermantown requested to pull its permits from future agendas. In a November 10th letter posted on Hermantown's data center project webpage, Minneapolis-based Mortenson Development wrote that it is taking, quote, the public's requests for more information seriously and plans to host an open house to facilitate open dialogue on the project. No date or venue has yet been announced. Development on the project has reportedly stalled since the city responded to an October petition for an environmental assessment worksheet. Hermantown officials already approved a rezone for the project area, but the environmental review was challenged in court earlier this month. The Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy joined the grassroots Stop the Hermantown Data Center group to demand further review for the large-scale data center. The city of Bagley is considering 2 wide-ranging options for the future of its police department. The Bemidji Pioneer reports a packed Bagley City Council meeting last Wednesday as council members deliberated whether to add more police officers to its 2-person department or disband entirely to contract with the Clearwater County Sheriff's Office. No formal decision is expected for several months. The provision to disband was originally introduced in October. Several Bagley residents spoke out against their police department disbanding, the Pioneer reports. The topic is likely to come up in future meetings, with the Bagley City Council meeting at 5:30 p.m. on the second and fourth Wednesdays of the month. Northern Minnesotans won 3 medals at the state swimming and diving meet last weekend. Megan Buffington has more.
The 2 student athletes who medaled are the same 2 who broke section records on their way to state. Park Rapids junior Avery Schuler finished 3rd in the 50 freestyle and 5th in the 100 freestyle, and Two Harbors senior Bella Imholt took 7th in the 200 freestyle. Only the top 8 medal at state, but Imholt also won the consolation final in the 100 backstroke, and Schuler and the rest of the Park Rapids 200 freestyle relay team also finished 9th. Additional swimmers and divers from Brainerd, Detroit Lakes, Hibbing, Bemidji, Rock Ridge, and Park Rapids competed in the Constellation Finals. Find the full results at KAXE.org.
The last four Northland football team seasons came to an end last week in the state semifinals. Here's Megan again.
Defending nine-player champions, Fertile Beltrami lost to top-ranked Hills Beaver Creek 30-14 on Thursday. And Kitson County Central nearly came back to beat Hillcrest Lutheran Academy, scoring two touchdowns in the fourth quarter, but the Bearcats fell short, losing 27-21. On Friday in 4A, Grand Rapids also attempted to mount a miraculous comeback with a two-touchdown fourth quarter that saw the Thunderhawks recover two onside kicks, but Casson Manorville won 16-14. Menominwaubin was the last Northland team standing by Saturday, but they couldn't keep up with the three-time defending single-A champions Mineota, who haven't lost a game since 2022. The Thunderbirds lost 28-14. Megan Buffington, KAXE News.
That's it for the Up North Report. Find more of our stories and photos at KAXE.org, where you can also find content from our music, phonology, and morning show teams. Sign up for the Buzz newsletter for the week's best stories and audio from your favorite community radio station. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
It is 7:06. We've got more news, national news, coming up next. We are learning about how China is expanding their renewable energy exponentially while the U.S. is going backward. Stay tuned for that story on renewables, and then we'll be bringing you John's full phonology report. Thanks for tuning in today.
We receive support from the Northland Foundation, working within Northeast Minnesota, offering grants, small business supports, and programs to help people and communities working toward a future where everyone feels they belong and can thrive. More at northlandfdn.org.
Current conditions around the region: 25 degrees in Brainerd with clear skies, 19 in Hibbing, 17 in Bemidji, 18 in Grand Rapids. Park Rapids reporting 23 degrees, Aiken reporting 15 right now.
Support for KAXE comes from UPM Blend and Paper, a provider of renewable material solutions with a focus on sustainability and innovation. Additional information is available at upm.com.
Our new Season Watch pod explores nature as the seasons change. We want to hear from you. How do you change when fall turns to winter? You can text us at 218-326-1234. I've got some tater tot hot dishes under my belt, you know. Some of the ways that I'm changing. Made my first homemade bread on a Sunday, so.
Oh, my.
We are changing.
Should eat at your house. Sounds pretty good. We receive support from the First National Bank of Coleraine since 1906, serving the needs of the community and working with their friends and neighbors with branches in Coleraine and Grand Rapids. More information at coleranebank.com. Member FDIC.
The Laurentian Chamber of Commerce hosts a community bonfire at Silver Lake in Virginia tomorrow from 5 to 7. Enjoy holiday music and make your own s'mores. Soup and chili will be served.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm A. Martinez. World leaders have gathered in Brazil for the UN Climate Conference. The U.S. is not there, but China is. When it comes to energy transition, the U.S. and China couldn't be on more different paths. China is moving away from fossil fuels while the U.S. is doubling down. Experts say this will have consequences for the climate and these countries' economies. NPR sent two correspondents to opposite sides of the Pacific to learn more. We begin with NPR's Julia Simon in Eureka, California.
In far northern California, Chris Mickelson drives an old police cruiser past little wooden houses.
Pine trees with moss just like hanging off of them.
Just an old seaside town.
Mickelson is the executive director of the Humboldt Bay Harbor District, which plans to assemble wind turbines for a massive new offshore wind project. About 20 miles off this misty coast, two companies, American Vineyard Offshore and German RWE, plan to build turbines to power more than 2 million homes. Mikkelsen says the project aims to make about 270 long-term local jobs.
It's going to, you know, change the economic viability of our community, and I get a little, my voice gets a little shaky because it's going to make a better opportunity for our kids.
Yeah.
That's pretty important.
The new terminal was supposed to be shovel ready as soon as 2026, Mikkelsen says. That's no longer realistic, in part because the Trump administration recently canceled more than $426 million in federal grants for the project. Mikkelsen says it's been pencils down since then as they try to find new sources of money. This is one of dozens of actions this administration has taken to starve the renewable energy industry of federal support, from canceling tax credits years early to issuing stop work orders. Amanda Levin at the nonprofit Natural Resources Defense Council says the U.S. renewable industry had been growing.
For the first time last year, wind and solar produced more electricity than coal. Things were headed in the right direction, but this really just takes the wind out of their sails.
The Trump administration is reversing support for renewables, which it incorrectly labels as risky and unreliable. But across the Pacific Ocean, America's biggest competitor, China, thinks otherwise. Let's throw the mic 5,000 miles to NPR's Anthony Kuhn, who's there.
You are right, Julia. Here in China, renewable isn't a dirty word. China's leadership has made strategic choices to include renewables in its energy mix. We're in China's Zhangbei region, which is in between the capital, Beijing, and the edge of the Mongolian plateau. The area is rich in wind resources, and it's where a lot of China's wind and solar capacity is being installed. Turbine blades swoosh past in huge circles. The electricity goes from here to a grid outside Beijing and on to the rest of China. China now dominates the global renewables sector. In the first half of this year, China built more solar than the rest of the world combined. 74% of all large-scale wind and solar projects are being built in China. Compare that to the U.S. that's building 6%. China now has more installed generation capacity from solar and wind than from gas and coal. It wasn't always this way. Until recently, China's economic growth came at the cost of air pollution from burning fossil fuels. But in the last few decades, authorities in Beijing began to consider a sustainable economic growth model, and renewables have been a key part of that. According to Qin Haiyan, director of the parent company of the wind farm we visited, and vice president of the World Wind Energy Association.
Developing the economy and reducing carbon emissions to address climate change are now no longer contradictory.
And this, according to the Asia Society's Li Shuo, is the biggest difference between the U.S. and China in climate policy today.
It couldn't be a stronger contrast between the two countries.
In China, solar and wind are now cheaper than coal and gas. Li Shuo says one of the most dramatic aspects of China's climate story is not just that they seem to be cutting their climate emissions,
but also to what extent other parts of the world can also benefit from China's low carbon products.
So China is now exporting turbines and solar panels and batteries around the world, from Brazil to Nigeria to Pakistan.
That's right, Julia. All the renewables growth, both local and exports, is a bright spot amid China's slowing economy, especially its slumping real estate sector. David Fishman is a principal at the Lantau Group in Shanghai.
People who used to be swinging hammers building commercial real estate are now swinging hammers installing solar panels. And that, well, yes, of course you double, triple down on that.
Back in Eureka, Mikkelsen walks along a creaky dock, an abandoned pulp mill looming behind us. He says he doesn't understand why the Trump administration would cancel the grants for the terminal supporting the wind project. He says this community has been suffering since 2008 when the pulp mill closed.
Our administration that was recently elected, not only at the presidential level, but even some of our Congress and senators really ran on a platform that we're going to build back America, that we're going to create jobs in rural America, good, skilled, trained, you know, high paying jobs. And there's no better place. You're looking around, you're seeing the remnants of what once was.
It is still unclear what the nationwide cuts to renewable energy mean for U.S. climate emissions.
But in China, the climate story is more clear, and it's a rare, encouraging indicator in the global warming story. The growth of renewable energy means that China's emissions seem to be on track to peak or are nearing their peak, Li Shua says. And China's renewable exports mean the country is helping other countries reduce their emissions, too.
Jeremy Wallace, professor at Johns Hopkins University, says now, at the end of the day,
what America does is part of a story, and it is not the main part of the story. It's a cute side character.
China, he says, is now the main character in the story of fighting climate change. Anthony Kuhn, NPR News, Zhangbei County, Hebei Province, China.
Julia Simon, NPR News, Eureka, California.
The Natural Resources Defense Council is one of NPR's sponsors, and we cover it as we would any other organization. This is NPR News.
It is 7:15. You're tuned in to the Tuesday morning show. It's People Powered KEXE. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer.
Who is in a panic.
You thought you had more time?
I thought I had another 4 minutes to actually assemble my program.
We've got some music we can listen to as well. I've chosen for you. Throwing off your
schedule. Don't realize that the show just gets assembled right here, right? Just like 5 minutes before I go on the air, I'm scrambling through my notes thinking, what am I going to talk about? I'll find something.
I have had multiple people over the years ask me, does that just come out of his head? Like, what's it like when you're there with him? And I'm like, well, he's got a few notes on a piece of paper and he's been looking at things. But basically, yes, he's telling the story, is coming straight out of his head.
It is. I invent it all. I make it all up off the cuff.
That's not what I'm saying. He's looking at his notes and his database and, you know, all of that. But it's not like you have written out an entire script.
Most of these things that I will be talking about are things that I'm familiar with. I mean, after 47 years of doing this, 40, how many is it? 83 to 26 is... 43?
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, I've done it often enough, and for the most part, I don't run into a lot of brand new things. Mm-hmm. I mean, the timing of some things, like I will be talking about clouded sulfur butterflies today, and okay. I don't have a lot of notes of clouded sulfurs this late in the year.
Ah.
This is kind of the tail end. That and... the little red dragonflies, the little sempetrums. After a while, you sort of get to know their story, and then you just kind of repeat it. And some of you are probably tired of hearing it, but, you know, others are brand new. And to them, it's brand new. Or they're like me, and they hear it, and they go, oh, I didn't know that, even though I might have said the same thing 5 years ago. At any rate, support for KEXE comes from the Loft Events Center located in downtown Bemidji, introducing their first elevated market Thursday, November 20th from 4 to 8 p.m. This monthly market features local creators, small businesses, cocktails, and more. Event details can be found at the Loft Events Center's Facebook page.
Weather around the region, sunny skies, highs 42 to 43, increasing clouds tonight with lows 24 to 26. Cloudy tomorrow, highs near 40, some rain may move in, and then rain is likely overnight. Looks like 30 to 34, and by Thursday, partly sunny, highs 39 to 43 degrees. Must still be deer hunting season still. It was a lot of traffic this morning before 6 a.m.
Yeah. I noticed that myself.
Very strange.
I don't usually, I count the cars as I come in, and it's usually like three or four.
Yeah.
Kind of a one-handed sort of a thing. And this morning there were people moving around early.
Yeah, because I do, you know, I kind of snake through neighborhoods so I don't hit lights that last forever mm-hmm. when it's that early in the mm-hmm. morning.
Yeah.
So very easy to get across a main drag at that time of the morning. but I, a lot of waiting.
I don't want to confess to any crimes, but at 5 in the morning, if I pull up to a red light and I look both ways and I don't see anybody, it's just me,
I am waiting.
A lot of time there. I just kind of look and think, well, you know what? I don't see anybody coming. I'm not going to sit here and idle away a minute or two. Well, the light decides what it's going to do.
Wow, you're a braver man than I am.
Scofflaw, I think, is the word you're looking for. Yeah, scofflaw.
I still think somehow. I mean, I get made fun of.
The camera, right?
Yeah,
they'll
the stop sign at the end of our road, or even every once in a while, John, this is how lame I can be. I'll drive down our driveway.
Mm-hmm.
And to go into a garage, I'll put the turn signal on because I forget I'm in my own yard.
Yeah, I do that too.
Okay,
I don't. All right. I haven't done it on my driveway for a while, but I've. Yeah.
I don't know. It's something.
I signal in and out of every roundabout, regardless of traffic.
Yeah.
I am going this way. I'm going that way. Yeah, it's just a habit, I guess.
There is an opportunity for you. If you want to become a Minnesota Master Naturalist,
ooh,
there is
I'd
a
like
five-day training at Long Lake Conservation Center in Palisade. It's coming up January 17th through the 21st. You can find more information and register at MinnesotaMasterNaturalist.org/courses.
Ooh, I should do that.
I don't think you need to take that training.
One never knows.
Oh, that's true. I suppose, and you always want to learn new things.
Always. Okay. Always. And that's why we're going to be talking with Clinton Nienhaus this morning. Clinton is a widely read and excellent naturalist at the Sac Zim Bog. He's going to join us for a conversation about winter phenology. So stay tuned for that coming up in an hour and 20 minutes or thereabouts. In the meantime, programming on KAXE is supported in part by the Minnesota Humanities Center, distributing more than $6 million in cultural heritage grants. Funding is available to individuals and organizations that will create, celebrate, and teach Minnesota's diverse arts, culture, and heritage, including indigenous organizations, historically underrepresented communities, and recent immigrants and veterans. Details at mnhum.org/grants. It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And we are pushing winter. And I guess the thing that sort of says winter to me is that when I look around outside of one or two recalcitrant buckthorn bushes, most of the leaves are down. Looking at trees this past week, I noticed that the white poplar, which is a fooler of a tree, it is kind of a low ball sort of a structure, doesn't have like a central tall stem the way, say, a trembling aspen does. But the white poplar is one of those, like the cottonwood, that is introduced to this area. It's not native here. But what you are going to see, if you're looking at white poplar out there today, are a few leaves that are almost snow white on one side, and on the other side, they are a dark brown. And they have three lobes. They look a lot like a maple leaf. If I just showed you one of those leaves and you are not familiar with the tree, you would guess maple. But it is popple. It's aspen. It is Populus alba. So it belongs to that group. And because it is a member of the Populus family, it is also going to be... there will be male plants and female plants separate, so they are dioecious, two houses. The other thing about them is that they hold their leaves late into the fall, among the last. And this past week, I've seen a few with leaves clinging to them. White bottom, brown top, maple shaped, three lobes, gonna look like a maple. If it has leaves on it in your neighborhood, it's probably not a maple. It's probably a white poplar. So check that one out. Cottonwoods are down to their last few leaves. Lombardy poplar, last few leaves. The willows are down to just a thatch here and there with some leaves on the top. For the most part, we are past the leaf stage now, which sent me afield and had me looking for green stuff. And this time of year, besides the buckthorn that I already mentioned, there are a fair number of green plants that will remain green throughout the winter. Ground pine, the round-branched ground pine is the way they define it, but it was always princess pine in my book. Lycopodium, princess pine. There's a northern ground cedar. There is three or four types of club moss. There are wood ferns, gold thread, hepatica. All of these plants remain green through the winter. And in some cases, it is just the lack of chemistry in the soil. So especially, I think it is, if I remember correctly, phosphorus. But if the soils lack phosphorus, oftentimes the plants do not drop their leaves in the fall. They keep them green throughout the whole winter. Gold thread's a good example. You find some walking along the edges of a swamp, maybe not in the not to the grass stage, but up in the tag alders, and maybe where the first aspens and balsams are growing. And look on the ground; you'll see these clover-like leaves that are going to be green, and that is going to be gold thread. So, some plants just hold on to it through the winter. Other plants, like the leather leaf and the Labrador tea, which are populating the swamps, these are ericaceous shrubs, and they also hold their leaves, primarily chemistry and nutrients. They just don't have them. Bogs where these plants grow, bogs and swamps where the leather leaf and the Labrador tea grow, just don't have a lot of nutrients, period. They just don't. And so these plants are much like the pines in that they hold their 1, 2, and 3-year-old leaves. And then once the leaves become three, they drop. And so the plant is always going to have leaves on it. Now, if you're driving along this morning and you're looking at some of these bogs or swamps and you see this undergrowth of sort of a rich reddish brown, it is probably Labrador tea or leather leaf, and both of those grow together. But interestingly, if you got up close and looked at them, the Labrador tea leaves lay down the stem, so they are like the branches on a balsam. They kind of go down the stem. And in the summer, they'll gain some turgor, and they'll become more erect and turn green again. But this time of year, they're sort of this reddish brown, and they're going to be laying down along the stem. And the leather leaf, also reddish brown, those leaves are going to be laying up against the stem. So the leaves, if you look at them closely, there's no comparison. The Labrador tea has a fairly long, narrow leaf that is rolled at the edges and very hairy underneath, very fuzzy underneath, designed to not lose moisture. And you might ask yourself, why would a plant growing in a swamp not want to lose moisture? Well, the truth is, none of those plants like having their roots in water. So they are all growing sort of above the water table. And the water table fluctuates. And if it drops, they might be denied water for a while. And so they are prepared for that by having this leaf that is basically the kind of leaf that you would find on a desert plant. It is designed to not lose moisture. But those leaves are going to be on the Labrador tea, down the stem, on the leather leaf, up the stem. The leather leaf is half the size of the Labrador tea leaf, doesn't have that rolled edge, and simply is a fairly heavy leaf, as you might expect for a plant that wants to grow a leaf that will hold up for 2 or 3 years and also not be subject to herbivory, which is insects coming along and chewing on them. So they're quite well designed. So in the swamps, the red leaves, lab tea, and leather leaf. In the uplands, gold thread, hepatica, all of the lycopodiums, the princess pine, the northern ground cedar, the club mosses, all of those are going to remain green right through the winter, and that's their adaptation. I got a nice note from Joel Rosen yesterday. He talked about having evening grosbeaks and pine grosbeaks at his house. He had a small flock, up to 10 birds of the evening grosbeaks and 2 pine grosbeaks. My good friend Jeff Burcham and Andy Pearson up in Bedette had pine grosbeaks and evening grosbeaks last week on Monday. So those things are, there are some in the area. I don't say that there are going to be a lot, but you may get lucky and have them at your house. The dark-eyed juncos at my house are declining. I still have 1 or 2, but not the numbers that I had a week ago or 2 weeks ago. Joel also reported seeing a gray fox while he was out at his house, so they are kind of in the area, which is kind of cool. The gray fox is smaller than the red fox. It has a markedly gray fur. And the gray fox can climb trees, quite adept at climbing trees. So if you find a fox up in the tree, it probably is a gray fox. I also got a note this week from Ted, who lives up near Togo. And he sent along a picture of a spot where an otter had come through and had been sliding on its belly. There wasn't a lot of snow on the ground, a lot of grass showing through, a lot of leaves. But this otter was making 12 to 15 foot slides as it went across the ground. And I suppose, you know, this is kind of like me getting on the ice pretty early when it freezes. This guy was just enjoying the slip and slide that was afforded him with some snow on the ground. So thanks, Ted, for sharing that. Craig down in St. Paul sent me a picture of what I think is a geranium blooming in his yard. And this certainly is late in the year, but in some protected areas, you never know. I mean, you can always check them out and hope for something. The tamaracks are down to their last ratty needles. If you look at a tamarack right now, the only needles that remain on it are on the new growth. So this year's new growth has individual needles, and they are still clinging to the tree and will for a while, but they're basically done. If you have a tamarack that is bright yellow right now, it is probably a European larch. We talked about them briefly last week. They are a relative of the tamarack. They are also deciduous, but their phenology is a little bit different. They hold their needles a little bit longer in the fall. And so those that are bright yellow right now are probably more likely to be a European larch than a tamarack. Looking, dandelions, saw some dandelions still in bloom this last week. I saw some midges, Chironomidae, I'm sure Sue Eggert is probably tearing her hair out right now. I'm doing my best. Bloodworms, these are the little mosquito-like insects that fly around that have no biting mouth parts. They're not going to bother you. They don't have anything to do with you. They're simply out there flying around. And we saw some of those last week on Thursday. And we also saw, I was out with a class from East Elementary School in Grand Rapids. We saw not only the midges, but we saw a clouded sulfur butterfly. One of the students, one of the young girls said, "Oh, there's a butterfly." And we all chased after it. And of course, it panicked and flew away, but it was a bright yellow. It was a clouded sulfur. And this is probably maybe the latest that I've ever seen a clouded sulfur. Just looking 1029 in 2011. Just not a lot of sightings this late in the year. So this is quite unusual. 11.7 in 2005, but this one was on the 13th. So new late sighting of a clouded sulfur butterfly. I'm looking through my notes and I'm not finding a whole lot more to talk about. Although if I go back in my notes and look through sightings on today's date, the 18th, in 2 years ago, in 2023, I had my last deer tick. In 2018, my last chipmunk. In 2016, we had 12 inches of snow in 2016 on today's date. Sean Conrad reported to me hearing and seeing a winter wren in 2009, last loon in 2008, and in 1988, Crooked Lake, the lake by my house, froze over and stayed frozen over for the rest of the winter. I didn't skate on the 18th. But I probably was skating by the 21st. I'll let you know when I get to skate this year. That's the Phenology Show for today. Thank you for tuning in. As always, if you have observations you'd like to share, please send them along. It's that time of year when many, many, many eyes make for an interesting report. Thanks.
Phenology on KAXE. You can catch up on Phenology. It'll be at our website. You can also hear parts of it during the Season Watch podcast. We're used to lots of folks texting in with us during the Tuesday morning show.
But
our text program is down because of some internet-wide security sort of thing. So if you've tried to get a hold of us this morning and we haven't responded, this is why. You could always email comments@kaxe.org. We'll see it there. And the Steve's working on it, and lots of people around the world are waiting on it, I guess, for some security.
Well, in the meantime, you could grab a half a dozen donuts and show up at the door.
You get three, I get three? Is that what's happening? We love to see you. We love your interactions and having messages from you. We've tried a new way of doing that on the podcast, Season Watch podcast. It's called SpeakPipe, and you can find a link to it on the Season Watch podcast page, and people are leaving messages for us. It's really cool. They've been listening to the podcast.
Wow. Excellent. And I don't know how it happened, Heidi, but...
You got a text?
I just got a text, yep.
Okay, so your text works. The phones are working. It's just the text program we use.
Yeah, so Olivia is learning phenology. Olivia is not a year old yet, but attentive.
Oh.
And, you know, start them young.
Yeah. What is she learning?
Well, I hope that she's learning, like, that, you know, larches are different from tamaracks, and maybe she's learning that it is possible to see a butterfly this late in the year. So,
okay.
Yeah, she's taking in the phenology show.
Great to know.
With the aid of her mother and father, okay. I'm certain.
Okay, that makes sense.
She probably didn't turn the radio on herself.
No,
I don't think
they
trust
her. But we don't know that.
Not yet.
It's going to be sunny today, 42 to 43 across northern Minnesota, with increasing clouds overnight, lows 24 to 26. Clouds moving in tomorrow, slight chance of rain, and then rain likely overnight. Highs again tomorrow near 40, and partly sunny by Thursday, 39 to 43 degrees.
Support for KAXE comes from Itasca County Habitat for Humanity, presenting their annual fundraiser, Building for Tomorrow, on Tuesday, November 18th. From 4:30 to 6:30 at the Cohasset Community Center. Event includes mission moments, silent auction items, and more. Full details are at itascahabitat.org.
Coming up this week, it's Give to the Max Day in the state of Minnesota, Thursday, November 20th. It's Minnesota's statewide giving celebration. Every contribution fuels nonprofits across our region, whether you care about arts and culture, food shelves, community health, public media, or outdoor access, your donation makes a difference. You can go to givemn.org and find a cause that is close to home.
We receive support from Edward Jones financial advisor Christina Gallas, helping individuals and business owners reach their financial goals. More information at edwardjones.com. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
I think it is about time for our best wishes, where we do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary. Today is November 18th. Take it away, John.
Oh. Please.
I can start. Barbara Whiting, happy 80th birthday to you in Aiken.
Happy birthday, Barbara. And Noreen Maturi is 78 today. Tracy Bartholomew is turning 50 today. Both Noreen.
Sorry, when you turn 5-0, you can kick. So pay no attention to me, John. Tracy's kicking out there. She knows what I'm talking about.
All right, all right. And Noreen and Tracy are both from Grand Rapids. And Amber Beth Van Ningen is having a birthday today. And Amber Beth is living in Ely. Happy birthday to all of you.
Care to try? I gave the key to my heart. You were everything I prayed. A dream that I cherished. Then you went and thrown it away. You make it hard for me to love you. Can't seem to put up with all the great things you do. I've tried to see this thing through. Why make it hard for me to love you? My friends are
Music there from Chris Stone, Kingfish Ingram. We heard the song called Hard to Love. It is 7:46. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Tuesday morning show. It's People Powered KAXE. Folks helping us out as we have a match on the table from Newsmatch 2025, a campaign that is supporting local nonprofit newsrooms like ours. And you helped us get over the hump of the federal funding cuts in July, as we are continuing to find new sources to raise funds to keep on going. And now your gift can go even further with this Newsmatch. We have over $35,000 in matching funds to support strong local journalism across northern Minnesota. Go to KAXE.org to find out more information.
It's time to continue our morning phenology reports, our student phenology reports. Funding for our phenology talkbacks is provided in part by the Minnesota Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. Phenology talkbacks are produced by Charlie Mitchell. Our next report comes from Long Lake Conservation Center near Palisade.
Hi, this is Daisy from North Metz Community School in Warba.
And Ethan, a.k.a. the Highlighter, from Cross Lake Community Charter School. During our trip to Long Lake Conservation Center on November 11th and 12th, the high temperature was mostly cloudy, 48 degrees Fahrenheit, with a low of 26. Fortunately, the skies cleared just in time to see the northern lights. It was a first for most of us. What a show. The lights were so bright we could see the dancing red and green lights with the naked eye. The colors painted the entire sky. It even looked like it was bleeding. Bill Koken from the Minnesota Astronomical Society said that the brightest and expanses of the auroras was very unusual.
We took a break from the Northern Lights to look through the telescope to see the rings of Saturn and the Andromeda Galaxy. We couldn't see much else in the night sky because the Northern Lights were so bright. Terrestrial sightings were highlighted by daily visits from otters and muskrats. We also enjoyed watching the squirrels gorge themselves on the birdseed. We had a great time exploring nature, and we want to remind everyone to unplug, get outside, and live connected.
Yeah, Daisy and Ethan, thank you so much for that great report. What a thrill for some kids to get out in nature and to see that absolutely astonishing display of northern lights. Just, they were unmatched, unparalleled. I can't recall ever seeing them that bright. The colors painted the entire sky, and Bill Cochin from the Minnesota Astronomical Society said that the brightness and expanse of the auroras was very unusual, and I would have to agree with him. It was very unusual. Otters and muskrats got to be seeing some of those. That's always thrilling. A lot of people can go through their whole lives and never see an otter or a muskrat. But here in northern Minnesota, not so hard. You just have to get out there and look a little bit. I thought that it was pretty interesting that we had a high of 48 degrees and a low of 26 from November 11th and 12th. It was just the beginnings of the warm period. I got almost 60 degrees on one of those very warm days. Maybe it was Friday last week. It was really, really warm. Quite nice. Our next report also comes from Long Lake Conservation Center near Palisade.
Hi, this is Hank
and Claire from Rum River Elementary School in Andover. During our Long Lake Conservation Center on November 12th through the 14th, the high temperature was an unseasonably warm 56 degrees Fahrenheit with a low of 24. During the middle of the day, it was warm and sunny enough for a few garter snakes to leave and wander away from their hibernaculum. Jackson reporting flushing on a grouse on the way to class, and we saw chickadees, nuthatches, lots of blue jays, and chunky squirrels on the feeders. In the woods, we spotted woodpeckers, red squirrels, and deer.
During fire building class, we
got an up-close look at a muskrat who swam close to shore to eat some water plants. It didn't seem bothered by us at all. Overnight, about an eighth of the lake was covered in it with a thin layer of ice, quickly melting during the day. Once the temperatures drop to normal, it won't be long before the lake freezes for the winter. It's been a dry autumn. The lake level was measured at only 1.14 feet. In September, the lake was measured at 1.45 feet. That's a drop of 21.38%. The Northern Lights put on a good show on Thursday night, and our teachers got some great pictures. We had a great time exploring nature, and we want to remind everyone to unplug, get outside, and live connected.
Thanks, Hank and Claire. Get outside and definitely live connected. And they were seeing the same temperatures I saw, 56 degrees. They still have a few garter snakes. They're lucky they have like a hibernaculum on campus. And so they can check on it daily and keep an eye on the garter snakes. Garter snakes hibernate as a group. So when they decide it's time to go to bed, they all crawl into the same spot. And so it really makes for a nice opportunity to observe. Jackson reported flushing a grouse on the way to class. Chickadees, nuthatches, blue jays, squirrels, lots of woodpeckers and deer in the woods as well. A muskrat who came in while they were working on building fires. Ice on the lake, it's very quickly going to be frozen. And I'm not sure when they say the lake level measured only 1.14 feet in September, the lake measured 1.45 feet. That's not the depth of the lake. That's just on their marking, on their measuring stick. That would be the measure that they have. So, but it is a 21% drop in volume over that period. Let's see. I guess that's about the last of the notes there. Again, Hank and Claire, thanks for your efforts. We're always encouraged to hear what's going on in your neighborhood. Our next report comes from Chad Caddett's class at Little Falls Middle School.
This is Emily
and Megan reporting from Little Falls Middle School. This is our phrenology report for the week of November 16th.
There were several sightings of barred owls this week, including a great video of one catching a small rodent.
This week, we saw and heard both tundra and trumpeter swans.
One thing we learned this week was that northern shrikes produce a pellet similar to owls to expel bones and hair.
We are still seeing some sandhill cranes around Little Falls, so they have not all left on their migration yet.
We have noticed several different bracket fungi, including turkey tails, artist fungi, and birch polypore. We had our first snow on November 9th.
Most of us were able to get out and see the Northern Lights as it put on quite a show this week. It was a unique week as more people were sharing their pics of Northern Lights than pics of their deer.
On the forest floor, we have noticed smaller organisms that stand out, including haircap moss and British soldier lichen.
Although they are not a common sight around here, this past week we heard the unmistakable call of a raven.
A classmate found an owl pellet and picked it apart to find it was filled with chipmunk bones.
We are seeing large flocks of wild turkeys in the fields and moving through the woods.
A fellow student found a huge bald-faced hornet hive that was built on a chair in his deer stand. It was several feet tall.
This is our report for this week. Until next week,
keep exploring, keep discovering, and keep connecting with the great outdoors.
Thank you, Emily and Megan. Nice report. As usual, Chad Caddett's really has his kids tuned in down in Little Falls. Looking at some of the stuff, barred owls, including a great video of one catching a rodent, tundra and trumpeter swans. I saw about 100 trumpeter swans on the Mississippi River this last Thursday, and I have not yet heard the tundra swans, but perhaps I haven't been out late enough at night. Northern shrikes produce a pellet similar to owls. I was not aware of that. Sandhill cranes last week we were talking to Pam Perry, and she mentioned that there were still some sandhill cranes in the Little Falls, well, in the Brainerd area, which is just north of Little Falls. Bracket fungi, turkey tails, artist fungi, and birch polypore. First snow on the 9th. Northern Lights, quite unique. More pictures of Northern Lights than deer. That's pretty surprising. On the forest floor, haircap moss and British soldier lichens. Unmistakable call of a raven. Up here we have ravens much more common than down there. An owl pellet was picked apart to find that it was filled with chipmunk bones. There was one chipmunk who maybe should have gone to bed a day earlier. We're seeing large flocks of wild turkeys. Bald-faced hornet. That would be probably the paper wasp. But, man, oh, man, several feet tall. Pretty sure he's really glad he had a hard frost before deer season opened. That would have been a little bit unpleasant to come across if you wandered into your deer stand and had a several-foot-tall hornet's nest to sit down upon. That would certainly keep you awake and probably active throughout the hunt. Our final report comes from Justin Steffen's class at Linwood Elementary School.
Greetings from our fourth grade phenology team in the Linwood School Forest. This is Mary,
Ayla,
and James,
reporting on our observations from the week ending November 15th. This week we observed our first snowflakes of the season. It got down below freezing for a few days in a row, and we noticed a thin layer of ice on the ponds and lakes.
We also observed a wild show of northern lights this week. We saw red, greens, and yellows. We learned that it is caused by storms on the sun reflecting off of our atmosphere.
We also saw that we have some identified vines growing up our lilac and our box hollow trees. They seem to be wrapping themselves around our tree's branches and using them for support. We also noticed that our black walnut tree is growing dangerously close to a power line in our parking lot. We wonder if trees grow bigger in the fall, spring, or all the time.
That's all from the Linwood School Forest. And remember,
there's no place like Linwood.
Thank you, Mary, Ayla, and James. Nice report. The black walnut growing dangerously close to the power lines. That's pretty exciting. And they're wondering if trees grow bigger in the fall, spring, or all the time. And the tree growth, the new tree growth, occurs in early summer. So you'll start to see the buds begin to expand and emerge in late April, early May. And then as May sort of fades into June, the buds really begin to accelerate their growth. And if you have a tamarack in your yard, go out and look. The part with needles on it right now is all new growth. That all occurred this last June. So the really big growth time for trees is in the early summer, just after spring. They really click it out and get going.